800-547-4804. That's 800-547-4804. Again, 800-547-4804.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Well, good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon on this beautiful, can we believe it, another beautiful day. Of course, wish it was a nicer day yesterday, but in any event, it is Friday, and the weather, although it's supposed to be only about 73, I think it's actually warmer. And what's happening for the weekend? Well, mostly clear tonight, mostly sunny tomorrow, which is something we really want, and then at least here we're hearing that there's a chance of showers on Saturday night, about a 30% chance. Unfortunately, a chance of showers on Sunday, high about 82 on Sunday, but about a 50% chance of showers, and then not looking good this next week. Now, who knows? Have to keep track of the weather because it changes. And it's been changing pretty regularly. Yesterday actually became fairly nice in the afternoon and evening until later. So by tomorrow, so let's see, winds could be as high as 24 miles an hour. Shouldn't be too bad. Now, Saturday night, if you're planning on something, unless you want to go out after 3 a.m., it should be fairly nice before then. And as I said, chance of showers on Sunday with thunderstorms possible after 3 p.m. So get out on Father's Day and do something fun in the morning. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the law. And before that, I did want to say, I really wanted to talk about the Guardianship Gala last night. Everybody who knows DJ Wright and knows how much he's done for the community would appreciate the fact that the volunteers guardianship one-on-one honored DJ last night at a gala. It was, I think there were about 190 people there, a Lambertville Inn station, and it was really a fantastic night. I think everybody had a great deal of fun. We had probably more clergy than I've seen in a long time. It was pretty nice to see everything from, you know, the Catholic priest, Presbyterian minister. It was nice to see there was one woman, some rabbis, and everyone, of course, they all know DJ. And if you don't know DJ, although we all want to see DJ when we're alive, because if we're not alive, it means that he's our funeral director. But I also wanted to express my appreciation for Chris. We know he's a great speaker, and he was one of the speakers last night. So it was really nice to, you know, hear him, hear the other speakers. Actually, two of DJ's college professors, believe it or not, were some of the speakers who talked about our star. We had a very successful Tricky Tray. If you don't know anything about Volunteer Guardianship One-on-One, it's really an excellent program, excellent volunteer group. There's a board, and of course, many of the volunteers, they're dealing with the elderly, handling finances, handling medical, and there's an amazing number of, well, not an amazing number, but there are a number of people here in Hunterdon County who really don't have anyone to help them out when they're elderly. Or at least from my standpoint as an attorney, I see some of the elderly who are really exploited by relatives, and the relatives are not doing what's in the best interest of their elderly relative. And, of course, we had a very nice message from the executive director, Cindy Douglas, and the president of the Volunteer Guardianship One-on-One is Kent Davis. But it was just fun. I mean, there was a lot of fun. There was good food. There was good camaraderie. And maybe that's why I'm so tired today. So we'll get back to talk about some of the things that are happening in the law after just a moment.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, we're back, and I'm Pat Smits, your host. It's the law. So what's happening in the law? Well, you know, some interesting cases and some not interesting cases. One of these weeks, I am definitely going to bring on probably Bill Wolfson to talk about bankruptcy, because there are really some interesting issues in the area of bankruptcy. But today, what's happening in just the regular news briefs? Well, the New Jersey Supreme Court had claims against a pair of Cherry Hill auto dealers who auto buyers say defrauded them through bait-and-switch tactics. And they're required to arbitrate their claims, according to the New Jersey Supreme Court, so that they can't bypass the arbitration clauses. So that it's always an issue, because most contracts that I see claim, you know, they do require arbitration, and this is not something that consumers often are looking to do. But it's mandatory, at least with this situation with the Supreme Court, as far as they ruled. Now, the Supreme Court has ruled that there's no cause for a new trial in a medical malpractice case where a doctor's pretrial testimony about whether he relied on a medical journal's article to prescribe medication that caused adverse effects differed materially from what he subsequently said on the witness stand. So that the court said there does not have to be a new trial as a result of that. So there was a publication, well, there's number of things that have been published, but some of them are fairly esoteric for most people. So there was a case where a plaintiff in a case moved to recuse the assigned trial judge, and alleging that the trial judge had personal bias against the plaintiff's attorney and against the principal member of the plaintiff, and the plaintiffs in that case were Racetrack Supermarket LLC. So it's not at all unusual that a client who has adverse rulings will question whether or not it's the judge and whether the judge has prejudiced against the client, prejudiced against the attorney. Now, the issue is whether or not the judge can fairly sit on the case. So obviously, you know, just because someone's disgruntled, that's not a reason to have the judge recuse himself or herself. So in this case, there were a number of allegations, and the plaintiff's counsel alleged that he was told under condition of anonymity that the trial judge held plaintiff's counsel personally responsible for the trial judge's defeat in various campaigns for political office prior to the trial judge's appointment to the judiciary. So that was, you know, that was a fairly significant allegation. And they also alleged that the trial judge funded and directed a political campaign against the son of the principal member of Racetrack Supermarket LLC. Now, the plaintiffs, however, acknowledged that there was no evidence of actual animus displayed by the trial judge. They argued that the appearance of impropriety required recusal. So that's important. They didn't have any evidence trying to say that the judge was actually prejudiced, but they said the appearance of impropriety required the recusal. So in this case, this was the law division case, and the court rejected plaintiff's argument and denied their motion. And then the court also noted that none of the events cited by plaintiffs occurred while the trial judge was a member of the judiciary, and further noted that the plaintiffs conceded that the trial judge had acted honorably at all times since being appointed to the judiciary. And the trial court held that although a trial judge can be recused for events that occurred before the judge became a member of the judiciary, I'm not saying that today, a trial judge can be recused based on events that occurred before becoming a judge. However, the trial court ruled in this case that the distance of the events cited by the plaintiff would not be viewed by a reasonable person as creating the appearance of impropriety. So that was the issue here, whether or not there any reasonable person would think that there was it was improper for this judge to continue. Sorry, somebody just came in and I lost track there. There are a number of other unpublished cases. There was a appellate division case where the defendants appealed the denial of their motion to compel arbitration. Now remember, any one of us can get involved in a contract that requires arbitration. And in this case, the defendants appealed, and they also wanted to stay further proceedings. So what happened in this case is the plaintiff was a minor. He suffered a fractured ankle, while participating in a game of trampoline dodgeball at a trampoline facility, and that was called Go Ahead and Jump. So that was the name of it, Go Ahead and Jump 1 LLC. And that was a franchise of the defendant's company. So what happened is before being allowed to participate in the game, the plaintiff's father was required to sign a release. And that release agreement included an arbitration clause. And so plaintiff and her father filed a personal injury suit against the facility. Now, plaintiffs further alleged that the release agreement was unconscionable and an unconscionable commercial practice. That's important. So the facility moved to compel arbitration. And although the trial court initially granted the motion, on appeal, the court agreed with plaintiffs that the trial court was in error in enforcing the arbitration clause in the agreement because it did not unambiguously inform plaintiffs they were giving up their right to pursue claims in court. So apparently, whatever this was saying, it wasn't unambiguous. So then after the defendants were added to the action, they moved to compel arbitration, arguing the court's ruling was invalidated by the U.S. Supreme Court, another case holding that, and the trial court rejected the defendant's argument, ruling that the court's prior holding had not been affected by this U.S. Supreme Court holding. And they said that because it reinforced the holding that courts were to apply standard contract principles in reviewing arbitration agreements. So that U.S. Supreme Court said that courts are to apply standard contract principles in reviewing arbitration agreements. So on appeal, the appellate division affirmed its prior decision, and the court ruled that the Kindred Nursing, this was the Supreme Court case, had not abrogated New Jersey law under, and this is another case in New Jersey, which required arbitration agreements to be placed on the same footing as other contracts when reviewed by a court. And therefore, it further required an arbitration clause to be sufficiently clear to notify a consumer he or she is waiving the constitutional or statutory right. Constitutional or statutory right. So in other words, not only is it, it must be unambiguous, and it must tell you, if you're signing these contracts, that you are in fact waiving your right to go to court. And that's very important because most people, of course, don't read these contracts. I certainly have signed a number of them that I have not read. And so people are unclear about the arbitration clause. But it is something that you should look at because you're waiving your right to go to court. And that can be a very important right. And it should be of concern if you're going to waive it. And that... So there was another, trying to see what might be of interest. There were several law firms sued for legal malpractice in the pelvic mesh lawsuits, and one law firm filed on behalf of 1,450 plaintiffs. And that apparently the retainer agreements that they had their clients sign were invalid under New Jersey law. So that big problem there. I do need to read this, although it's not of interest to many people other than lawyers. Our new New Jersey State Bar Association president is Evelyn Padin. And what they said about her, she's a dynamo, and some have called her a Renaissance woman. She really is a dynamo. She's an attorney. She's a restaurant owner. She's been involved in commercial development, and she's the first Latina to head the association in its 120-year history. So that's really significant. There have been a few presidents of the New Jersey Bar Association, and a couple from this area. So, but there have only been a few women who've held that position. And so this is special, and this is a special lady. So in any event, there was a question about a case that focuses on how drug recognition experts, that evidence is used. The New Jersey Bar Association did file as friend of court status. And it centers on whether testimony that a defendant was under the influence of narcotics while driving is admissible under a standard that we use here in New Jersey. Criminal case that was approved for publication, State versus Thomas, and that was a appellate division case. And in that case, the state appealed from a judgment of conviction imposing probation on a defendant for a third-degree aggravated assault. Now, the defendant also pled guilty to fourth-degree criminal trespass after admitting that he trespassed on his former girlfriend's property and refused to leave, and on a separate day hit her on the head with a liquor bottle. So now, this is not a domestic violence case. This is actually a criminal case. And so there was, in fact, a judgment convicting this man and providing, instead of jail time, probation. So the state unsuccessfully moved for imposition of a discretionary extended term under the persistent offender provision. So in this case, a victim had written to the trial court seeking leniency on the defendant and stated that she did not want to proceed with the prosecution or see the defendant go to prison. Not terribly unusual. So what happened, however? In this case, the trial court, acknowledging a statutory presumption for incarceration due to the crime involving domestic violence, found that the defendant was contrite and, based on the victim's wishes, sentenced him to 4 years probation. Okay. On appeal, so the state appealed that. They filed an appeal on that conviction. And probably not just because of this case, but they didn't want to see any precedent set. So on appeal, the state argued that it had the right to appeal defendant's sentence, contending that it was illegal. So that would be why they would be able to do this, if in fact it was illegal. But the appellate court rejected the state's argument and dismissed the state's appeal, ruling that the state had no statutory authority to appeal a probationary sentence imposed on a third-degree offense. Now, they can appeal if it's a first or second degree offense. So obviously they're much more serious offenses they can. So the court further agreed with defendant that double jeopardy prohibited the state from appealing for a harsher sentence after the defendant had already served a portion of his sentence. So what the defense was saying is, wait a minute, you're placing this man under double jeopardy. He's already served part of his sentence. And they can say that because initially it's not like they couldn't have applied for a stay. They could have applied for a stay with a trial judge. So finally, the appellate division concluded that the probationary sentence imposed on the defendant was clearly authorized by the law. That's important. Clearly authorized by the law. And therefore, as a result of that, the state could not appeal simply because it found the court's reasoning inadequate. So that's be important to some of the criminals out there, put it that way. So let's take a short break and play some of the spots from our sponsors.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms. When they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Okay, we're back. I'm Pat Smith's program, It's the Law. And what else is happening? Well, there was a revised expungement bill that was sent to Governor Murphy's desk. I guess when we say things like that, it sounds a little strange. It obviously wasn't sent to his desk. It was sent to him. But that's the term we usually use. It always makes me laugh when I think of some of these terms and how difficult it is for someone who's learning English to understand some of these statements that really seem like they're a statement saying something other than what they're saying. But in any event, that was it cleared both the New Jersey Senate and the New Jersey House. So that's significant, very significant. There's also a program, if you know any veterans out there, there's the New Jersey State Bar Association. I guess I should provide these kinds of spots and information, because there is a New Jersey State Bar Assistance program. And there's a, through the Military Law and Veterans Affairs section, there is a Military Legal Assistance Program. Now, the pro bono program provides assistance to New Jersey residents who have served overseas as active duty members. So they served overseas as active duty members of reserve components of the Armed Forces. Now, this service has to be after September 11. So, hoping you're doing that. If your lawyers out there need all the lawyers we can get, it's a pro bono program, and it has helped hundreds of veterans resolve civil matters, but more volunteers are always needed. So, you know who you are, you can get out there. Let's see what else we have. That's this week. Well, there's a case, it was a labor law case. I guess it was for publication, it was reserved, so maybe. But in fact, the well, there was a revised expungement bill that I said. Now advocates say the bill will go for reforming the criminal justice system. And it's especially in communities that are hit the hardest, which makes a lot of sense. So, maybe back after brief break.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The U.S. military is revealing video evidence to support the claim that Iran was behind the attack of two tankers in the Gulf of Oman. The military says the video shows an Iranian Navy boat removing an unexploded mine from a Japanese-owned tanker. Retired Navy Admiral and NATO Supreme Allied Commander James Stridvitas tells Fox News what he sees confirms claim that make him very nervous about the growing tensions between the U.S. and Iran.
I've spent half my life in the Gulf of Oman and in and out of that Strait of Hormuz many, many times. This is a difficult, challenging set of circumstances. We are on a collision course. I'm worried.
Iran is denying any involvement in the attacks, and the Democratic National Committee is announcing the lineups for the first party-sanctioned presidential debate. A random drawing was held in New York to split the top 20 qualified candidates into two fields of 10. Those debates will take place later this month in Miami. This is USA Radio News.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS and you cannot afford to make payments to the IRS, you may qualify for the CNC tax program. This is a new program, and if you qualify, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Once you're accepted into this program, the IRS is forced to stop all harassing collection activities. No threatening phone calls, no wage garnishments, no bank levies, and no more monthly payments to the IRS. Get ready to write this number down. It's the most important number you'll ever need to end your IRS tax nightmare. Call Paramount Tax Relief at 800-547-4804 for a free confidential consultation to find out if you qualify for the CNC tax program. Once you are accepted into the CNC tax program, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Call Paramount Tax Relief now at 800-547-4804. That's 800-547-4804. Again, 800-547-4804.
Okay, we're back. The program, of course, is It's the Law, talking about some of the cases and some of the other decisions that have gone on in the last week. And be somewhat slower in the summer. The judges now work year-round, but of course that means they can take vacation at any time. In the old days, there was almost nothing going on in July and August because half of the judges would vacation in July and half in August, and they were just trying to keep up with their own work when they were back. Obviously, I'm one of those people who think we should have, I guess forget that. I don't want to get into a political discussion right now. So the, I think I did mention, or maybe I didn't, there was a $1.7 million settlement in Union County, and it was a medical malpractice suit stemming from the obstetrician-gynecologist and a midwife. So there was an obstetrician-gynecologist and a midwife. That was a malpractice suit against the gynecologist and the midwife. And it's because they failed to notify a pregnant woman that she was carrying a fetus. with Down syndrome. So because they didn't tell her, and they must have known that, she was carrying a fetus with Down syndrome, and they didn't tell her. So that's why she has this huge lawsuit. So there was a regulation, best interest, and the agency's four-pronged advanced standards package from the Securities and Exchange Commission. So this information is spread out virtually to everyone, although there's still some people who don't have trucks. So I guess there's also the forever changed dispute resolution process for employees and employers in New Jersey. And that's by rendering unenforceable any provision in an employment contract or settlement agreement that waives any substantial or procedural right or remedy. So that really means that if you sign on for employment and there is a potential, there's only one way to resolve it. Of course, you can just go ahead and you're going to have to do what you have to do. You're not going to be able to litigate because the agreement says you're going to arbitrate. And for various reasons, a lot of people don't want to arbitrate, but all the companies do. It makes it much easier. They consolidate all the work, and it makes it much difficult to get out. Okay. The one of the firms in South Jersey, Archer Greiner, first time in 17 years, the head of the board of directors at that firm is a woman. So long time between that. I'm sure they have a good reason. Yes, she's a woman. But in any event, I think that law firms are recognizing and have recognized the talent of women, but the excuse has always been that the women aren't bringing in the big clients, and therefore the male partners should be rewarded because of what they're doing. And I'm not saying they shouldn't. It's a far cry from the days where they would say, well, you don't need to earn as much money as the male associate because you're married. And, of course, they didn't say that to the male associate, always expecting that the male associate, the wife is just home and wasn't contributing, when in fact many of them had jobs that were much more lucrative than young attorneys. But it's really congratulations goes out to Archer Greiner for that. Basically, although they have an office, I don't know if they any longer, I guess they may still have a small office in Flemington. They have an office in Princeton, and mainly it's Cherry Hill, Philadelphia. It's one of the big firms, what we consider the big firms in South Jersey. Apparently, the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee battled over the propriety of questioning Peter Phillips, a nominee for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, about his membership in a Catholic fraternal organization. Interesting. How anybody want to get into some of the new areas of law? Well, drone law apparently is a quickly evolving area because these unmanned aerial devices expand from a hobby to uses in numerous industries and fields. So apparently that's, of course, New Jersey continuing education will find something to teach about everything. Now, the judge overseeing the pelvic mesh mass tort in Philadelphia has denied Ethicon's bid to move the consolidated litigation outside of southeastern Pennsylvania. So that is somewhat similar to recusing the judge, recusing the whoever they contracted with. So that would be that'll be an interesting situation, because if they had won, everybody would be doing it. So there's an arbitration, and this was, again, I mean, this arbitration is huge, and it's a huge fight over whether litigants should be able to proceed in court if they've signed some of these form agreements. In this one, it went up to the Supreme Court, and this was the decision of the Supreme Court. So the defendants in this case appealed from the appellate division's order reversing the trial court's grant of the defendant's motion to compel arbitration in the plaintiff's actions. So what this happened is case number one, the trial court, there was litigation, and there was litigation in the trial court I've got somebody here who's kind of smiling at some of this, but in any event, the trial court granted the defendant's motion to compel arbitration in the plaintiff's actions. And so what happened is the plaintiff purchased vehicles from defendants' dealerships, and the plaintiffs, that's more than one, I briefly spoke about this, plaintiffs argued that the defendants' fraudulent practices and misrepresentations caused them to sign the purchase documents. So there were, for example, there were in this case, there were documents that were invalid, according to the plaintiffs, that were invalid due to the defendants' violations of consumer and fraud statutes. However, the documents contained arbitration agreements that also delegated the issue of arbitration to an arbitrator. Although the plaintiffs filed actions to cancel their purchases, the trial court ruled that the arbitration agreement plaintiffs required So that's the appellate division in this case subsequently reversed the orders compelling arbitration. So the trial court ordered arbitration. The appellate division said no. And the appellate division held that precedent required a plaintiff who challenged the validity of a sales contract in its entirety to also specifically challenge the validity of an arbitration provision therein, and that would be to avoid the binding effect of the arbitration agreement. So the court noted that plaintiffs challenged the sales agreement in their entirety, but rather than rather than the validity of arbitration provisions, the issue of arbitration, they wanted to send that to an arbitrator. So in this case, the court ruled that the U.S. Supreme Court precedent clearly required plaintiffs to resolve any claims about the validity of the sales contract, along with any other issues regarding whether something was able to be arbitrated before, this had to be done before arbitration. So, and it had to be done before an arbitrator. So this guy was not going to. So there are other cases that are not published, but there are a couple that were. Mainly, well, there was another one, appellate division case where there was a The defendant appealed from his conviction for attempted murder, aggravated assault, unlawful possession of weapons, etc. And these cases always go up on appeal. But this, he attacked and found guilty, attacking and severely injuring two women and a man who came, and the man came to their rescue, and he attacked them with a tomahawk and a knife. At trial, defendant asserted as his defense the theory that his time of his attack. Okay.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Well, we're not going to go to the news right now. I will play a couple other spots, and then we'll be back to talk more about this the appeal from his conviction for attempted murder and other issues.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, I'm back. Let's talk about the State v. Mest, because I think it is instructive as to sometimes people would wonder why our case is overturned. But in this case, the defendant appealed from his conviction for attempted murder, aggravated assault, etc. And he did not deny that he attacked and severely injured two women, and also the man who came to their rescue. And he did that with a tomahawk and a knife. So back in the days when the kids played with t- toy tomahawks. This apparently was a real one. So at the trial, the defendant asserted as his defense the theory that at the time of his attack, the time he attacked, he was under the influence of then-lethal synthetic marijuana, and his use of the drug triggered a substance-induced psychosis. Now, the state had previously videotaped an interview of the defendant by the state's psychopharmacology forensic expert. And at trial, the prosecutor, during direct examination of the expert, played portions of the videotape interview to the jury. So they got to see this. Then during closing arguments, the prosecutor argued that the information defendant provided to the state's expert during the videotaped interview was substantive evidence contrary to the defense's theory that it was just merely an indication of mental illness. So that was the issue. And the prosecutor also noted testimony that defendant had a violent hallucination days before the attack. I guess we're not going to comment any more about that here. But as I said, the prosecutor said that and then alleged that even though this happened, had a violent hallucination days before the attack, he chose to continue using drugs anyway. So on appeal, the defendant argued that the trial court erred by failing to give him a limiting instruction to the jury. I shouldn't say him, because it would positive and be positive. It's I guess arguing that whether or not that was clearly such a substantial error. So what happened is the appellate court reversed, and they agreed, and they reversed the conviction, and they rejected the defendant's contention that playing the interview violated his rights, noting that the defendant never objected to playing the interview. So that's always what's very important in any case. If you have a lawyer representing you and there's something that he or she should object to, they have to do it at that time. So that, however, the court ruled in this case that the defendant was entitled to a limiting instruction by any trial court. And since substantive information invasion, subsequent and substantive information that was conveyed by the court expert could only be used by the jury to assess the expert's opinion. And I guess that's happened. So the court, going back to that case, found out that the recorded interview was used by the state as direct evidence to nullify the defendant's theory. It wasn't brought up. So the court found that the recorded interview, as I said, was used by the state as direct evidence to nullify defendant's theory, and that was okay. So there's another land use, Gross v. Iannuzia, defendant city approval for application to demolish his beachfront home damaged during Superstorm Sandy and replace it with an elevated and enlarged freestanding residence. Lots of people have been looking at the shore to buy some of those old cottages and tear them down and renovate. Is she here? Sorry, looking to something else here. Getting trying to do too many things at once. Sorry about that. So in this case, Gross versus Iannuzzi, there was an application to demolish a beachfront townhome that had been damaged during the superstorm. And they wanted to replace it with an elevated and enlarged freestanding residence. So the trial court rejected this proposal and the alternate proposal to rebuild and elevate the townhouse on its original footprint. So ordinarily, it's not a big problem if you're going to replace a structure if you use the original footprint. Excuse me. I certainly know that there are cases, in fact, right in front of home I used to live in, where I don't know how they ended up doing it, but they apparently used the original footprint, which was a small garage, and went way beyond what would, by most people, be considered reasonable. So in this case, the trial court relied upon a declaration of covenants and restrictions that entered into effect when the townhome development was built. So apparently during the pendency of the appeal, the state legislature amended a statute concerning flood-safe construction. So the original statute adopted in response to Sandy prohibited enforcement of development ordinances that prevented flood-safe construction, including the raising of Sandy damaged structures. So in this case, the legislators amendment expressly added row houses and attached townhomes to the restrictions. And then on appeal, so this was the deed restrictions could not be used to prevent elevation in Sandy damaged structures. So they recognized that it would be unsafe to rebuild without having built higher up, and so that's why they agreed. So the court then first affirmed the trial court's ruling that Iannuzzi could not raise his damaged townhouse and build a freestanding house on the lot. The court ruled that the declaration prevented Iannuzzi So he couldn't build a freestanding house on the lot. The court ruled that the declaration prevented Iannuzzi from having a freestanding allegation. So he couldn't just make an allegation. So the court ruled that the declaration prepared him and prevented him, I should say, from building a standing house on the lot. And that the declaration prevented him from building a freestanding house without majority of approval of the owners. I don't know if that's true, because I don't know all the regulations, obviously, that the realtors deal with. So if you have that, give us a call. Because we really need to find out whether or not my clients can approve. And then the court ruled that the amended statute pertaining to the rising of sandy damaged structures to comply with flood safety and apply to the Brown houses. And prevented either the declaration or attachment. And the court further ruled that Iandazi was not obligated to reduce the height of the townhome to maintain the original roof line. So, you know, that really, let's see how foolish that would be. If you have a, you know, one-story cottage and then decide that you're going to use the same footprint, which people can do, but